My name is Tom Quirk, and I'm living at Ian Cannell Court, which is a sheltered housing for ex-servicemen. I was born in the Isle of Man, and I was actually a farmer's son, along with four other brothers and a sister. Mother left home when I was 10, never to return. And of course, we ended up in the children's home for not going to school. And there was only one future for the children's home kids. Girls went into nursing, boys went into the services. And I was in the Navy in Scotland. But I was inspired to go in the Navy by the boys from HMS St George. We were living halfway between Hilbury and Brandish Corner, and 7:30 in the morning, in a dark morning, we could see sparks at Hilbury Corner. Wondered what it was. So my brother and I dashed out, and it was the Navy pulling a field gun up the hill at the double and swinging a lamp, and they had a chief pushing his bicycle behind them. And we used to run behind them, and the chief used to say, "Get out of it," and swing his whistle chain. When we got to Craignabar, of course, they broke up and they sat down. They opened up the limber at the back and got sandwiches out and pop. And we sat on the hedge, and the chief came over and gave us some breakfast.
So that was your first introduction to the Navy, was a field gun somewhere in the Isle of Man, which is a bit sort of random. What were they doing with it? Were they just sort of practicing with it? Or?
Well, that's how they keep fit as well.
Yeah.
And running all the way up to Craignabar, and then having something to eat, and then all the way back.
Gosh.
It was quite interesting. And I thought, I'd like to do that.
So what age were you when you actually joined the Navy?
15 and 3 months.
Gosh, it's so young, isn't it, when you think now?
Yeah, it is, yes. Yes, went up to East Nook of Fife, which is Crail. And there was boys' training establishment there. And it was bitter cold.
No dragging field guns up and down hills then?
No.
So did you know much about what you were actually getting yourself in for then when you joined up?
Yes, I did really, because I took an interest after I'd seen the St George boys.
And remind us what year this was when you actually joined up.
1948, I joined up.
So you'll have heard, you know, the stories about the Second World War, obviously, but that didn't put you off at all.
No. I decided I wasn't going to join the army, though. That's mm-hmm. for sure. But the Navy was for me, you know. You take your house with you, you know.
That's a really good way of looking at it.
The army carry it on the back, and the Air Force go home every night.
And do you think you were maybe in a bit of a better position coming from the island, being surrounded by the sea, probably feeling a bit more comfortable with the water anyway?
Yes. I think the majority during the war, the men from the Isle of Man were picked for the Navy because they were fishermen and they mm-hmm. were coasters. But the one thing that really those boys that I knew, 1941, and when I joined the Navy, I then found out the history of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They were all dead before 1942.
Gosh.
Because they went straight from training to the big ships.
I mean, you must have had a lot of friends and family around that time then that were potentially lost.
That's right, yes. All those boys that I saw running up to Craignabar were dead. That really brought it home that what we were in, you know, a war.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was on the ship with those that had lost brothers and the likes. There was 10 went from the Isle of Man in the forces for the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's 3 of us left now.
So let's come to that then, because we hear a lot about, you know, what was called the Great War, and then we hear, you know, we hear plenty about the Second World War as well. But as you say, you fought in the Korean War, which is often called the Forgotten War, started in 1950. And in fact, when we were sort of communicating in advance of this interview, you suggested it may as well have been known as the Third World War.
That's right, yes.
But it's not often talked about.
That's right. It wasn't reported either. And there was the only way that anybody in the Isle of Man got any information was Pathé News in the cinema. It's the only time they had any report about the Korean War. But they used to send me the Examiner every week.
You'd get the Examiner to the ship?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they never sent the parcel post up the coast of Korea when we were up there for a month. They used to keep the parcel post, which was the newspapers. And when we got back into Japan for our fortnight off, we had the mail came in, and it was quirk, Examiners, quirk. And the lads who didn't get mail, they shouted, "Quirky, give us one."
And so they'd find out about the Isle of Man.
That's right. I threw one, and of course somebody would shout, I've got one.
So let's come back to what the war itself then, because it was sort of the North and South Korea divide, wasn't it?
Korea was one nation prior to the Second World War. The Japanese had been in Korea since 1901. So they were all Japanese occupied from 1901. And the United Nations, the end of the 1945 war, the Koreans were split off from the Japanese and liberated by the Americans and the Commonwealth. That then formed North and South Korea.
Hmm.
And Stalin, of course, he was still there, and he decided to take over the North, and he built them up with Russian... in fact, there was Russian planes in the Korean War, and Sabre jets from the Yanks. So the worst thing in the Korean War was the napalm, and it turned the snow black and stuck on everybody, you know.
Gosh, and that's the one thing that I think, you know, if anyone does know a huge amount about it, you know, a lot of it is because it's known as being a really awful, awful war, and the conditions must have been so difficult out there.
Yes, I mean, it was freezing, 20 below zero, which was, like I say, cold.
Yeah.
And when we went up the coast of Korea, we were always in the north, and it was freezing every night. The sea froze. And the first night up, our captain was inexperienced, and of course, we dropped anchor, and the ship then got jammed in the ice, and with our broadside facing shore. And the first night we were there, we had a shell, which was a big lump of iron, come across the ice, spinning. And it hit the side of the ship and just rang it like a bell. That was the last time the skipper went sideways on to the shore. After that, we made sure the nose was pointing in so that he couldn't hit the side of the ship, you know.
I mean, you talk about him as being, you know, perhaps a bit green and, you know, sort of a bit wet under collar, but... most of you mustn't have known a huge amount about the region before you got there, and what you were actually...
We didn't know anything about it. We didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
We were travelling and travelling, took the ship out from England, and we were going on and on and on to Singapore and Hong Kong, and where is it? There was no news, intentionally no news, you know, because it was the Third World War, really. all the communist nations got together against the South. So the South, of course, had to get support from the Americans mainly, but Commonwealth were all there.
So just describe that for me, what you're wearing, that medal.
This medal is United Nations. It's for the Battle of Gapyeong, which was right across the waist of Korea. And it was quite a battle. All the nations that took part are commemorated on this medal. So...
And it's wonderful to see you wearing it now, obviously with pride. But, I wonder as well, not just not knowing much about the region itself when you went out there, but did you know anything about what you were actually going out there for before you got there?
No, not really. We didn't get that sort of information. The news was intentionally kept from us. And really, I suppose it was nobody wanted to say it's the Third World War. But it was, really.
So what was your sort of part in it then? Because you're talking about the fact you were just sort of off the coast there and in ice, sort of stationed off the coast there. Tell us a bit about what your role was out there.
Well, we were support for anyone. And there was several pilots were shot down in the water, both the North Koreans and South. And we used to go rescue them. And we've got one famous case in there that it was late at night. It was rough, cold. And it was so cold that big 4-inch horses, ropes, when they got under strain, they just snapped. Three of our lads got frostbite because of that. When they had gloves on, they stuck to the gloves stuck to the horse, and they had nothing on their hands, so they got frostbite, and we had to lasso them because they couldn't do anything with their fingers, and pull them inboard down to the sick bay. And there was an American landing craft came alongside, and they decided to go in to the aircraft that was in the water, 5 crew aboard, and they just smashed the wing off and got them into the landing craft, and the aircraft sank straight away.
So they were just in time, basically.
Yes, and we thought actually we lost that, but We learned later that they all survived.
But the war itself, I mean, as I said, it's known as being a particularly harsh and quite gruesome war. And I think we've got some figures here that there was some 5 million soldiers and civilians lost their lives. As you said, America played a big part. 40,000 Americans died. The peninsula's still divided today, obviously.
That's right.
And there's an awful lot going on over there. And when you think about the situation over there now, when you think of what the men out there did, do you ever sort of think, gosh, was it worth it then?
Yes, it was worth it. And I went out in 2013 on a free holiday given by the South Koreans to all who have fought for them. And when you saw little kids, coming to the veterans, us, we had a tag around our neck, Korean War veteran, and the children used to come up and worship us. So all the children graduating in the schools got £500 to start them off. That was from our fund. And of course now there is, they're about fifth in the world, the rank about fifth in the world for wealth, South Korea, which is quite some achievement. They got everybody housed after the war in high-rise blocks with running water and all the rest of it. Because the whole country was devastated completely during the war, now in 2013 when I went over, they were building little bungalows round the bottom of the high-rise buildings and pulling the high-rise buildings down and making a nice little circle of bungalows. The shipping industry, Hyundai, is biggest in the world, registered in Douglas. Alex Downey went over and did that. Other firms, LG, and there's a thriving country. So, yes, it was worth it.
Can you picture what it may have been like if the forces hadn't been out there to support the South? What do you think might have happened to the country?
It would have been just another communist state. The communists had the idea at that time of the domino effect, just knocking small places down all the way around.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing that you're part of. It really was. And yeah. And you brought in some wonderful photos and that book and everything, you know, sort of your time out there. And there was a photo in particular you showed me of some children in an orphanage, because that's something you supported, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, the Commonwealth ships, every time they came up to relieve another one, they went to the orphanage and fed them and anything for the kids, you know.
Did you leave them an examiner?
Plenty of them.
So did you actually make land very much while you were out there, or did you pretty much remain on the ship?
No, I remained at sea for the month. The first time I set foot on South Korea was in 2013.
So until that time, you'd never actually been to South Korea?
No.
Gosh, that must have been quite a moment.
Yes, it was, because all we'd seen prior to that was pictures. Pathé News showed the pictures. Devastation. It was a nightmare to be fighting in the ice and snow. Mm-hmm. And having to live. They couldn't dig a hole, even. They had to get blocks, you know, sent out to them. Blocks and build a little hut. I'm glad I wasn't in the army.
So while you were there, you didn't really know a huge amount about what was happening to the chaps that were on land and what they were going through?
No. We got it on Pathé News, but that was after the event.
Mm-hmm. So you said at the start of our chat, you were saying how, you know, you thought that the Navy might have been the right place for you, and it clearly was, because you became the chairman of the Royal Naval Association, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
So when you finished your service out in Korea, what happened then? What was next for you after that?
Well, I went to Suez. Suez Crisis was a long, drawn-out affair. They had a bit of a war early on in the 50s. When I was there in 1956, it was more or less monitoring that it wasn't going to flash up again, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is one of your most sort of poignant memories, I suppose, from your time in service?
Really, it educated me. I came from the children's home, and on my training in the Scotland, the schoolmaster called me out on the first day we were in school and said, "Quirk, you're a long way behind the rest." And I said, "Well, I could never manage to do fractions." And he said, "Well, I'll give you extra work if you'll do it in the evenings." He said, I was at Ballacameen during the war. Lieutenant Bridges, one of my significant men, because not only did I catch up with the rest, I overtook them. So that educated me.
And did you remain in contact with many of the chaps that you were in Korea with when you were out there?
Still do. Every year we have a reunion. I think in the Korean War there's about five of us left. Older than me, one of them. So we still go on. And we're meeting again next May.
And you certainly keep yourself busy, because you put out a newsletter, don't you?
Oh, yes. Well, it's three a year, and the next one is Christmas. I'm always on the lookout. My flat is like a newspaper office. Papers here, there and everywhere. So...
And obviously, one of the reasons why we're talking to you this morning is to sort of give some sort of idea of what gentlemen like yourself, people like yourself, women like yourself went through in these times of really extreme wars. I mean, the Great War was called the Great War for a reason. You talk about this being, you know, the Forgotten World War, the Third World War in a way. You all gave so much. In this time of remembrance, what sort of words would you like to leave people with to have some thinking?
It's really, the First World War was said to be lions led by donkeys. And when you can think, what on earth was the point of fighting over a field of mud just to get to the other side? You could have gone round. But in those days they had horses, and the number of horses that died in the First World War, there's a special memorial to them, simply because of the carnage there was. It was a ridiculous war. And I've recently put up posters in Ian Cannell Court, and it is about the atom bomb and what the Americans said. And of course, it's the Daily Mail reporting on the atom bomb, and it said, the end of the Army, Navy, Air Force, we won't need them anymore because we have the bomb. And of course, the kid quickly came to realise that you do need them because nobody's going to use the bomb. And if anybody does, there's going to be no future for anybody. And actually, the skipper who was on the Enola Gay, it was called, the aircraft, he said when he dies, he wants his ashes scattering into space so that nobody can go to his grave and ransack it or whatever. So that's what happened.
It's another perfect example, isn't it, of, again, the lengths that people have gone to in order to protect the rest of us, you know.
That's right,
So it is clearly so incredibly important that as we come to this time, we do always remember them, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Awful. Don't recommend it.
Well said. It's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thank you so much for taking the time.
That's a pleasure to be here.